This is a recording of a conversation with Mr. Rene DeWild of 155 Blake Street, Barrie. Mr. DeWild is reputed to be the first person to grow tobacco in Simcoe County, and he will describe some of his experiences to us in that regard. This recording was made on the 28th of November, 1972.
Mr. DeWild, you were born in Belgium.
Yeah, that's right.
And you came out to Canada when?
1924.
That makes you quite a Canadian by now, eh?
That's right, yeah.
And when did you come to Barrie?
Oh, I came to Simcoe County in 1940. That's when I started growing tobacco. And I quit growing tobacco in 1961 and moved to Barrie.
Where did you get your experience with tobacco before that?
Oh, we used to, the first years we were in Canada, we used to go to work in tobacco in Leamington.
Oh, yeah.
Just for the tobacco season and the harvest. And then that was only about 6 weeks. And we used to go there every year, like for 2 years. Well, then we started growing tobacco and put ourselves like on fairs in West Lawrence.
West Lawrence?
Yeah, I think that's Elgin County.
In Elgin County?
Yeah, just in a small scale. We grew burley tobacco there and...
Well, who do you mean by we?
That was me and my father.
Your father was
with
you then?
That's right. Uh-huh. So then we grew two crops in Elgin County, and then in 1929, I went to Delhi.
Uh-huh.
I was a hired man to grow crops for an older man, you know. He couldn't he couldn't drive his own car, and he didn't know too much about tobacco, so he hired me. And I worked for him for 1 year, and then I got married in 1930, and I started share cropping again then, you know, up around Delhi. So I grew tobacco around Delhi like 9 years. Or, yeah, 9 years. I grew on stairs. And then a friend of mine that was up to Wasega Beach in 1939, and he came to my place in the fall of 39, and he says to me, if I was a young man like you, he said, I would go down there around Pasega Beach and look around. He says, there's some nice backland there. And he says, I bet you can buy very reasonable. So I took his advice, and three couples, six of us, you know, men and women, jumped in the car, and we came down and looked around for tobacco land here in 39. So we had a little bit of trouble at first to find it. So we stopped in the hotel in Creemore, and this gentleman explained it to us where all the sandy land was around Creemore and Ulola. So before we went back home, we all bought a farm, the three of us. But there was only one that kept the farm. The other boys got kind of scared and let it go again. But I moved up in 1940. And
how did you decide that it would be good to back a land? You like
we knew the land was good, but we had to take a big gamble on the climate, you know.
But you like light sandy land?
Yes,
tobacco.
That's right. And that was very nice land.
Well, what did you think about the climate at that time?
Well, we had to gamble on that, you see. We drove around to some people, and we even went to Medhurst on the reforestry station.
Mm-hmm.
And the results they gave us wasn't too good. And then we went to Angus at the seed plant, and they gave us the temperature, you know, from the year-round lake, mm-hmm. and it didn't sound too bad. And of course, Angus is about the worst place for frost in Simcoe County, you know.
Is it?
Oh, yes. So then, anyway, we had bought the farm, and we had to go through with it. So there was two of us moved up the next spring. A man, he's dead now, Morris Greer. He bought a farm not far from me, and he kind of didn't want to grow himself, and he just let the farm lay there, and he went to work in Cambodia. So there was two other Belgian families that bought farms, and they didn't come up either. They all got scared, I guess.
Scared of the climate, or?
Something, and the tobacco price that year came down a little bit too, you know, in 1939, and that kind of scared them too. But I came up and tried it, and we didn't put in too much tobacco the first year, only about 9 acres. And I was short of the money. I paid cash for the farm, but I didn't have any money left to build the farm up, see? So I went down to the bank in Creemore, and was the Montreal bank. And the funny part was, there was a man, he said, there he came from Dalhousie.
Oh, yeah.
That was his first year there, too. And I thought I was all set because he knew all about the back, if he would help me out, you know, to finance me. But he didn't want to. He kind of tried to talk me out of going in the back.
Because of the climate, probably.
The climate and the tobacco prices wasn't too good, you know. And so then I didn't have much money left. And then this Morris Greer, the one that didn't start on his own farm, he was supposed to go together with me to put up two kills and help to finance the tobacco. See? So that's the way we started. And then Greer, he backed out, kind of. He got scared. So then a man by the name of Don Duff from New Lowell, we got him worked into it. So that 9 acre crop was split up between the three of us. And they all pitched in, you know, and invested some money in it just to get the crop off. Well, then the toughest part was, you see, we didn't have no grown rice. What they call, we were grown tobacco on the blacklist, see?
You have to be approved.
And you have to belong to the marketing board.
Yeah.
And we didn't belong to the marketing board. So I shipped my first crop of tobacco to a new tobacco company. They were just processing tobacco. And they gave us a good price for it. The price was very good, almost top price they paid that year.
You had no frost problem that first year?
No, not the first year. The funny part was, the first year we grew tobacco in New Rome, all the tobacco froze in Delhan, the 23rd of August. Yeah. And our tobacco didn't freeze till 3rd of October. Well, it was all in, but I mean, we didn't get
didn't
a frost.
Killing
a frost. Yeah. So we shipped our tobacco in that company, and we didn't get our money for 3 years, so that was a big blow.
3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The company was under finance too.
Yeah, they didn't have no money. You see, and they just bought tobacco from these blacklist growers. You see, and they didn't have any money themselves, and they had to wait till they sold that tobacco. They first had to grade it and pack it, and then they had to sell it. So that took about 3 years before I ever had any money out of it. And in the meantime, I had to pay my debts and carry on. So I started growing a few potatoes and had a few head of cattle, you know. And we increased the crop a little bit to 15 acres. And I was growing tobacco like that in a small scale. Growing tobacco like that in a small scale for about 4 years.
In those first 4 years, did you have any killing frost?
It wasn't too bad, no. The first killing frost we had, and it was a bad one. That was in 1946. Had about a quarter of my crop off when the frost came, and that was on the 3rd of September, and it just took everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a high blow.
What kind of tobacco were you growing then?
Well, that's what I call Virginia, the cigarette tobacco. You know? Mm. So then in 1945, there was a lot of people came in from up around Delhi. start coming in around Everett and more around New Lowell, and then it spread out to Alabama.
They heard about you growing?
Oh, yeah.
That's what brought them, I suppose.
Yeah. The first crop I sold to the Imperial Factory, the Imperial Tobacco Company. They really like our tobacco from up here. When I took it in, my first crop, they graded it and they hung it all on racks in the basement. And somebody told me that they held it there till the people from Montreal came down to have a look at it. But it was very nice tobacco. They grow very nice tobacco here, just almost as good as you do down south. But it's a little more risky, you know, the season is a little bit, yeah.
Did you ever meet an Alan Blair in Collingwood?
No, I haven't.
Well, he's made a big study of the tobacco Indians, you know, the tobacco Indians grew tobacco.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And he made a study, and he found that on the edge of the escarpment there, at the level between 1,000 and 1,100 feet, the frost drained off. And he kept records, and he averaged 3 weeks longer growing period every year.
Oh, I believe that, because you take right here in Barry, the farm has been sold now for about 4 years ago, I guess. Tom Murphy owned that farm up till about 4 or 5 years ago. And I've seen us freezing out in Angus and around New Lowell, and they wouldn't have any frost up here because they're not much higher, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, then the tobacco business went ahead to quite a big scale in
Yes. One time there was over 100 tobacco farms in Central County.
And how is it now?
Well, they're going out pretty fast, putting it as fast as they can.
Why would that be?
Well, now the tobacco growers nowadays are allowed to sell their tobacco right, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had a farm in, the first farm I had in New Lowell was 230 acres, and I had 72 acres of rice on that. I was allowed to grow 72 acres of barley. That's what
mm-hmm.
I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But then after a few years, I kept cutting the acreage down as much as 50%, you see. And a lot of growers say that 45 acres of rice, that was a good-sized farm. By cutting them down to half, they could only grow about 22 acres and a half. So then it started about 4 or 5 years ago, they allowed the growers to sell these rice. And it started all at $1,500 an acre, and now they're paying as much as $2,000 an acre. So the farms up here, they all had a big acreage. So I sold my farm in 1961 in Angus for $70,000. That was equipment and everything. Now, if I had that same farm with the 63 acres of rice on it, I could sell my rice for $2,000 an acre.
$126,000 for your rice alone.
For the rice alone, I would still have some of the land. I have all the buildings and all the equipment.
Well, now, do they have to grow on the same land, or
no,
do they transfer their rights to Delhi, or wherever they want?
They transfer them to Delhi and Kielsenburg and Aylmer, you know, up in the southern, and Norfolk County, mostly.
Yeah. They did.
Yeah. Well, but one time that wasn't allowed, you see, it's just the last...
Did you have any trouble getting spring help here?
Oh, yeah, it was pretty hard for help.
It was?
Yeah. Although they have trouble all over now.
They have trouble all over now.
They have it all over around Delhi, Kielsenburg, and all over. It's just seasonal help, you know. And
I suppose the seasonal help would congregate around Delhi and Tilsonburg.
They would go there before they come here.
Yeah.
There was a few southerner boys used to come in here. I had some boys coming in from North Carolina, and they were very good, you know, they knew tobacco, and they usually stay for the harvest. But a lot of boys from around here, they maybe come from up north or from Quebec, and as soon as they make a few dollars, they
leave. Well, they need some experience, too, do they have?
Well, a few, we always prefer to have experienced help. But if you can't get them, you have to take anybody you can get a hold of, you know. But it doesn't take them long to learn, you know.
Oh, it does.
No. But a few years ago, it was very hard work working on tobacco. You had to stoop down to pull those two, three bottom leaves off, and that was murder.
On your back?
Oh, on your leg.
Yeah.
But now they have these tobacco machines where you sit down.
Yeah.
You don't walk anymore, and you sit down on your feet. And let it low down to the ground. You see, and as it come up on the plant, you raise your seats up. And it's much easier. I've seen young kids just starting in high school, and they low down the whole harvest, 14, 15 years old. And they were paid $18 a day.
But what, you take off the lower leaves first?
Usually your priming is about two or three leaves. You take the first two, three leaves off what they call fan leaves. And by the time you get over the crop, it's usually about a week. And then you can go over again in a week's time and pull another two, three leaves. That's what they call the second pulling.
Second pulling?
Yeah.
And, P-O-L-L, is it?
Pulling, yeah.
Yeah.
And then after that, you just keep on going every week. Over the crop, you'll have the whole harvest done, you know.
How
it's about 18, 20 leaves or 22 leaves on
so
the plant.
So you go anywhere from 6 to 7 times.
Yes, and, well, in the fall, like, when the weather gets kind of cold and people get scared of frost, they don't pull 2, 3 leaves anymore. They usually pick 4 and 5
uh-huh.
and get it done with, you know.
Well, then when a tobacco man says that he got half his crop in, it wouldn't be half the acreage, it would be half the pulling.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would get some off every plant pretty well.
Oh, yeah. You pull pretty well on every plant, that's right. Oh, it's,
Well, did you grow many varieties, or did you all in this area?
Well, we always own the rest several varieties, but one grower wouldn't grow any more than one variety.
And you always stuck with Virginia, didn't you?
Well, they call it Virginia cigarette tobacco, but there's several different names.
They're different names?
Yes. We used to have about 4 or 5 good varieties, you know. They used to have Delca was a good tobacco. And Virginia, they have Virginia tobacco. Oh, I just can't think of all the names.
They'd be trade names, I suppose, by the seed growers.
Yes, and they keep improving the varieties mm-hmm. too, you know, every 3 years.
Where's most of the seed grown?
Most of it is grown around Delhi and Tilsonburg.
You never had any experience in this in Belgium? You learned it all after you came out here?
No, I learned it all here in Canada, yeah.
Well, how many bad years would you have out? You grew up here for about 20 years, 21 years.
Yes, I grew from 1940. Well, till 61. But then, in between time, I sold farms, you see. The first farm I owned was in 1940, and I sold it in 47.
Now, where was it exactly?
In New Lowell.
Well, can you remember the lot and concession that you grew it on?
I think it was concession 4, and I believe the lot was 22 and 23. I have so many farms, it's hard to remember.
Yeah. Can you remember some of the others?
Yes, I had what happened is he... His first farm I sold was 230 acres, and I had 72 acres right now. And I sold it to a man, and he didn't do too well on it. he was going to lose the farm, you know. And I had the right to put him off the farm because he couldn't pay his insurance and he didn't pay his taxes. He didn't pay my interest, and I came to Barry to the lawyer, and he told me that I could take the farm over again, you know. And I didn't feel like doing that because the old gentleman was pretty old. And I made a deal with him that I took over. I bought 100 acres from him, like the 32 acres of rice. And he got 40 acres of rice, and he still had 130 acres of land, so he could carry on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I paid him for the 100 acres, that's the 32 acres of rice, and I built it all up.
Did you ever hear of a Dutch auction?
Yes, that's
well, that's just about what you did, wasn't it?
That's the way they sell the tobacco down south in Tilsonburg and Delhi. That's where we sell all our tobacco. The three warehouses, there's one in Delhi, one in Tilsonburg, and one in Elmer. And each warehouse has a Dutch clock.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they sell them back and on.
Well, now, we may not be talking about the same thing. If you get behind in your taxes in a city house, the city of Barrie can come and take your property and sell it for taxes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a farmer, and you've got to make your living on your land, they can put it up for a tax sale and say, who will pay these taxes for how many acres? Let's say your farm is 200 acres. A man will say, I'll pay the taxes for 100 acres. Another man will say, I'll pay the taxes for 90 acres. Another man will say, I'll pay the taxes for 50 acres. And the man that offers to pay the taxes for the lowest number of acres gets the land, and they there is the farmer who's making his living on it, keeps the rest, and so he still has some living. That's just about what you did with this man.
Yes, only he was in good shape yet.
Yeah,
he still
but that's what, that's what they, that's the way they have to, the law used to be here anyway, if it hasn't been changed. In the 30s, that used to be the law here, and they used to say selling by Dutch auction.
Oh, I see.
So I wondered, this Dutch, I don't, can you explain this Dutch clock to me?
Yes, it's just like it's a round clock. It's very big. I think it's about 4 feet across. And it has numbers on it. And I forget now, but I think it would start like from a dollar. And it keeps going down, even cents. Say from a dollar to 99, you know, 98, 97, it goes down to maybe 5 cents. See? So the clock goes down. It starts at the dollar. It doesn't start on the bottom from a cent. It starts from the dollar. And the tobacco buyers.
Nobody will buy for a dollar, then it goes to 99 cents.
Yeah, and the tobacco buyers, they all have a number of your flash, of your tobacco in the warehouse.
Yeah.
They already graded that tobacco. They know what you got. And they got their numbers on their books. They don't know whose tobacco it is, but they know what quality it is.
Yeah.
And they say they want a tobacco, they want to buy that tobacco, say, for 70 cents for the flat. They'll wait till the clock come down to 70 cents, and then they push the button. The clock stops. So they got that flat of tobacco.
That flat, you call it FLAT?
Yeah, that's a flat of tobacco. It could be 30 bills, it could be 5 bills, it could be 12 bills. But that flat is all the same grade.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It could be a good grade or a bad grade.
And what was this price be based on? 100 weight or what?
That a pound.
A pound.
70 cents a pound. Although there's some tobacco we sell maybe for 15 cents a pound, you know, the poor quality. But, well, there's another company here have got Sam Flap, and he, on his books, he's got 72 cents. So when it comes to 72 cents, he pushes it. And the other guy maybe wanted to buy it for 70.
Doesn't get it.
But he doesn't get it. The one that pushes 70 72 or 71 he gives to you. So that way, they got to be very careful to pay a good price for it if they want to kill it.
Yeah, otherwise they lose it for good.
Yeah, because there are several companies
bidding against you.
And the warehouse that wants to buy that tobacco, see? And that's a good, honest way.
Well, did you always have to ship down to those tobacco markets?
Always.
Because there was no market here. No buyers came here.
They used to come and buy it here a few years ago before we had this new marketing board. And the buyers used to come in the barn. We had each kilo of tobacco by itself, all piled up and everything. And the buyers, they used to come and pull about 4 or 6 or 8 sticks of tobacco out of each pile. And then they grate that, you see. They put it on their book. And they done the same with each kilo of tobacco. If you had 25 kilos of tobacco, they had 25 kilos marked on their book. And there'd be 25 grades, you see. Like each kilo has a different grade almost. It'd be some the same, but there'd be a lot of varieties of grades in there. He had that on his books, and then when the market opened, we have to drive down to Delhi, go to that office, and then they tell us what our tobacco was worth.
But you wouldn't have to ship it to Delhi?
Not yet.
No.
We have to, we can, after we sold it, then we came back home, and then we graded all the tobacco in our barn, you know, it's called a strip room. And we have sometimes 8 grades, you know. And in each kilo of tobacco, you have almost that many grades, you know. You have what they call bright. And then you have two different darks, and we have some red in it, a little bit red, and then you have two different greens, and then you have what they call scrap, you know, and it runs about 6 or 8 grades in a kilo of tobacco. So after we grade it, we have a press, you know, and we build it all up, put papers around it. It's very neat the way they build it up. Then the company lets us know how many bales of tobacco, how many kilos left we can bring in. So we used to take it down to Delhi that way and just unload it.
Well, you didn't ship it direct to the company?
Yes, right to the factory, right to the company.
Well, their factories were in Delhi.
Oh, yeah.
I see. Yeah.
The Imperial Tobacco Company, they have a factory in Delhi, and they have one in Aylmer. But
you wouldn't get as much money as the man in Delhi because you had to pay your transportation out of it.
We got about the same prices, but it cost us more to ship the tobacco.
Yeah.
Now they charge about $11 a ton.
For shipping
down to Delhi Steel.
Did you have any interesting experiences, any unusual experiences while you were doing this?
Yeah, we had a lot of hard times in the start.
You did?
Yeah.
Pretty discouraging.
Yeah. One year in Angus, my tobacco was all planted, and I even started hoeing and cultivating. It looked pretty good. And that's the mistake I made when I started cultivating and hoeing. We were out at about 2 days, and we started in where we had the most weeds, you know. Of course, we always do that. And the wind came along, and it just blew the whole crop off. The tobacco leaves, you see, half stand, the plants are small, 4 inches high. And from the sand blows against the plant, you know, at terrific speed, and the hot sun, and it just burns the plant. And I lost nearly my whole crop that way one year from the wind.
You're pretty discouraged.
Oh, yes. And the funny part of it was I had hail insurance on it already, you know, when it was
no wind insurance.
No. And the crop, to me, looked very bad. I never thought I was going to have a crop. And it was too late to replant. I didn't have no more plants, and I didn't want to drive down to Delhi and look all over for plants, so we just let it sit for a while. Then after a couple of weeks, it started coming along, you see. And by the end of July, I had a fairly good crop again. But I took the hail intrusions off in the spring, you know. I thought I never was going to have a tobacco crop, and one day I went to the bank in New Lowell, and I told my banker, I said, they're giving a lot of hail around Delhi this year. I should put hail intrusions on my crop again. Well, he says to me, he says, that's up to you. He says, we usually make the growers put on hail and intrusions. He says, but he says, you haven't got too much money for it in the bank. He says, you can't force it. He says, it's up to you. So I came home that day, but before I got home, I lost my whole crop from hail.
You didn't have the insurance?
I didn't, and it was the first year, the first time in all my life I had no hail insurance, and I lost the whole crop.
Quite a gamble, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was the biggest setback I ever had.
The tobacco was
just laying, it was a heavy rain with it, and quite a bit of wind, you know. And the leaf was just laying in the water on the field when I drove through the field. I came from New Lowell, and I came through the storm, got the hail in Angus, and I was about 2 miles south of Angus. I didn't drive into the yard in the house, I just rode right in the field, and the tobacco leaves were laying all over.
So break your heart.
So I could tell right there it was finished.
Did you have tractors or horses when you first?
Yeah, I had tractors.
You never used horses?
Oh, I did for a long time.
Oh, you did?
I had horses up till 47 when I sold the first farm.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and then I started, when I started the other part of the farm up again, when I built that up, that was in 1950 when I started up again, and then I started with tractors.
How did the other farmers, what did they think of you, the local farmers, when they saw you coming in starting to grow tobacco?
Oh, they were very interested. The only thing they didn't like about us, we paid the higher wages to the local people.
And you were, the first group of you were all Belgians, were you?
Yes, pretty well.
Did this cause any resentment?
No. No.
You never had any problems?
Oh, no, I came in there all by myself in New Lowell, and with all Canadian people, and they were very good to us.
You no complaints?
They made us feel like home.
That's good.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, they were very good.
But they thought that maybe that they were competitive for your...
For the labor. When I came to New Lowell, we paid 3.5 a day. That was 1940. Well, on the farms, they were still working around there for $1.50, $2 a day. See? We paid 3.5. And then it kept going up every year. It kept going up a dollar every season, you know. And then at the end of the war years, it just jumped about $2 a season, up to $20 a day.
You had some cattle?
I did the first year, but after I had enough money to carry on.
Just tobacco alone,
yeah.
In some of that area, there seems to be a lot of white turkeys, too, eh?
Turkeys?
Yeah, I guess that's over near Stainer more.
Yes.
That's a relatively new thing, I guess.
The other side of Stainer on the...
I came west there and I saw the big... I'd like to get a map of Simcoe County and see if you could identify that first farm, because someday we might even put a plaque up there to say the first tobacco was grown here by your name and, you know, and the...
That's why I'm in the Salt Mouth place. And I have a sign up on the farm, 5 years tobacco farm.
Oh, you have?
And it was still on there this year.
Well, we might get, you see, the Simcoe County Historical Association has an agreement with the Simcoe County Council that they examine and recommend two plaques a year, two metal plaques a year.
Yeah.
For different things. And this Pioneer Tobacco Farm would be a very interesting plaque. And it's put up and watched over by the Simcoe County people. What township was this?
Sunnydale.
All in Sunnydale?
Yeah.
All your farms in Sunnydale?
No, I had one in,
You had one in Esk? Well, you've got to sign up now, Paul.
The sign is still on there, what I put up in 1942, when I rebuilt the barn.
What was this fellow's name over here? Page? Page, isn't it? The agriculture representative that lived over on...
There used to be a representative in Central County here by the name of Page.
Yeah, he lived in Barry.
He retired quite a few years ago, I think.
Oh, maybe 6 years ago?
Yeah, I think.
Very poorly.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was in to see him about 4 or 5 years ago, and he's very weak.
Oh, I didn't know
he's
that.
He's a very fine fellow.
Yeah.
Did you get much help from the department?
No, nothing.
Nothing from them.
We didn't ask for any help, and they didn't help us any.
Well, I suppose in this area, they never paid much attention to tobacco in those days. They didn't know too much about it.
And it started in the...
Stuart Page.
Yeah, Stuart Page, that's right. It started in a small scale, you see, and it really boomed in 1945. But we had some publicity one time at Centennial from Creemore. And there was a man came over from Toronto, from the Globe and Mail, and he put a big write-up in the Globe and Mail about the tobacco.
Did you keep a copy of it?
I still got it here in the house someplace.
Have you?
Yeah. I could show it to you if you want to see it.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to. That was regarding Simcoe County.
Well, he just put up a good write-up about the tobacco booming in Simcoe County.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what.
And I believe it helped some, too.
Well, I'll tell you what we should do with that. You know the Simcoe County Museum?
Yeah, it's up in Medford.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been in there.
Well, sometime if you're driving past there, take this article with you and go in and ask for Mr. Moran in the archives, and he'll take a photocopy of it and put it in their records.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have it.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it very much.
Well, I still got it.
Is it handy?
I lost it once, and there was a lady in Delhi I used to know, and up till I got away from her in 1935 was the last time I saw this lady. But when I worked up at the back of farm in Delhi in 29, she was my neighbor, like, you know. And she saw something in the paper about me, about tobacco. And she had this clip, whatever you call it, she cut it out of the Globe Mail quite a few years back. She just sent it to me about 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh, you lost the first one.
I lost the first one, but I got exactly the same one back.
Well, if you are ever out and you feel inclined to, if you took it to Mr. Moran, he'll make photocopies of it and put it in his record. Because he's trying to build up those records.
Yeah.
And you can tell him that I suggested it. And I'd like to see it if it's handy.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Okay.
I think I can find it.
Well, can you think of anything else you'd like to say about the tobacco business, or do you think you've talked enough about it?
Well, the only thing I'd like to say about the tobacco business, that seems to be very sad to me that these tobacco farmers are going away.
You think they're leaving somehow, huh?
Yeah, very fast. And to me, I don't like it. Because I work hard, and we have a lot of memories about the tobacco in this district, and it just makes me feel sad to see them all going out.
You felt it was sort of a personal thing.
Yes, and I think it was a good thing for the county,
mm-hmm.
because these farms were no good at all. They wouldn't even grow good potatoes.
They were so sandy.
So sandy. And now they were all built up, and the township was given high taxes, you know, up to $1,000 a farm for taxes, because they had a lot of good buildings on it. Now they're selling, tearing the buildings off of it, and the taxes are dropping, and the people are out of work, you know, and it means quite a bit to
them. Oh, yeah. You got to felt a certain pride in having
Yes, I did. I still have a feeling for the tobacco in this district.
What's the next, the same land that grows tobacco, what else does it grow well? Is it good for onions?
No. No, it's too dry, you see, it's light sand. And they can grow potatoes on it.
What about grain crops?
But they need irrigation.
They need irrigation.
Yeah.
Grain the same.
It's no good for grain.
And it's poor for pasture.
Yeah, all it's good for is tobacco. They used to grow rye on it, but there's no money in rye. It grows good rye.
It grows good rye.
But there's no money in rye.
Uh-huh.
That's a poor man's crop there.
Yeah. Well, I guess they have to go back to pine trees.
Well, with the fertilizers they got nowadays and with the irrigation they got, I think this plant will well be picked up for growing potatoes. They're already doing it.
They are.
Yeah.
Well, I know I buy potatoes from down in or out there. I mean, the people come up and sell them up our way sometimes.
And I tell you, all the potatoes grown on the back land are good potatoes because it's good drainage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's light soil and they grow very good tasting potatoes.
But they need some irrigation.
They need some irrigation, but the heavy fertilizer and nowadays, they can grow very good.
You never had to irrigate at all with tobacco?
Oh, yes, I did every year.
Oh, you did some irrigation?
Yeah, but the first 7-8 years I grew tobacco here, I didn't have irrigation. But after that, it started coming in, everybody has one now.
How did you put it in? With pipe and...
Yeah, you have to have a river or a good pond.
Yeah.
I was lucky in Angus, I had a good river. Another saw the river.
Yeah, and you pumped it and then sprayed, did you?
Yeah, we had a big motor by the river, and then we had 16 pipes. That's what they call the main line. It runs right in the middle of the field. From your main line, you run into between the tobacco, the smaller pipes, like 4-inch pipes. You reduce them from 6 to 4 inches. And about every 12 rows, you put your first row in and then spread 12 rows on each side about. So that means every 24 rows, you put a little sprinklers in.
Yeah.
And it's a slow job though, because when it's real dry, you have to water about 2.5 hours on a line, or 2 hours.
A day,
and you can't go too far in a day. You know.
No. Well, I'll go out and get the map.
Yeah, I can mark it for you.
When Mr. DeWild mentioned the lot numbers of his farm earlier in the interview, he may have been thinking of his second farm. In looking at the map, he says his farm was the first road west of New Lowell, turning south, and you turned to the left and went about 1/4 mile down that road, which would make him probably lot 3 or 4 of concession 3. But it has a Pioneer Farm indication on it, Pioneer Tobacco Farm indication on it. But it could be just below the bend in the where that highway, County Road 9 dips south, about a quarter of a mile down from that road. Is it on the left or the right-hand side as you turn south?
It's on the left.
It's on the left-hand side when you turn south.
Go west through New Lowell, it's on the left-hand side.
Then you turn south to the left. Yeah. Now, once you turn south, was it on the left or right-hand side of the road?
Oh, the left.
It was, yeah, you
farm
turned.
Was on the left.
You turned to the left, and then the farm was on the left. And it was about 2 miles from there that you turned to the right to go into Glencairn. So that would put it, should put it on lot 4 of concession 3. Lot 4 of concession 3. However, we'd have to check it.
At this point, he read into the tape recorder an article published in the Globe some years ago. I don't have the date. Due to an error in the recorder, in the recording, this was lost. And we're now trying to make arrangements to get it photocopied and placed in the Simcoe County Archives.
The article referred to by Mr. Ironside in the interview has been found at Simcoe County Archives. The article is from the Globe and Mail of Wednesday, July 31st, 1946. It is entitled, Sands Produce Gold in Camp Borden Region. There's gold in the sands around Camp Borden, tobacco gold, and the rush really hasn't started yet, although Rennie de Wild, a Belgian-Canadian since 1924, made the discovery near New Lowell 6 years ago. Two other tobacco prospectors came in after Rennie to make a three-farm start on sand loam farms, which before had been mixed grain lands, and sold for a few thousand dollars to the newcomers. Today there are 21 tobacco farms, with new ones being converted almost daily. Farms that changed hands before the war, but seldom over $4,000, are now rich tobacco tracts, worth all the way up to $40,000 and more. De Wild was the pioneer and thus has the right to the name Pioneer Tobacco Farm on his big barn in Sunnydale Township. I haven't had a bad crop since I started, he said. Our big danger is frost, but it hasn't hit us hard enough yet to matter. In fact, we checked the weather with the Delhi District, the old tobacco belt, and there isn't much difference. With De Wild the pioneer, Akel Curly de Shepper, a 42-year-old native of Belgium, is New Lowell's almost overnight tobacco king with three farms and 85 acres in cigar and cigarette plants. Curly came to New Lowell in the spring of 1945 with $16,000 in his jeans after sharecropping in the Delhi country for 15 years. Good crops from the fine new land find him the biggest grower in the brand new gold belt today. Curly de Shepper left Belgium in 1927, despite the protestations of his parents, worked at day labor around Montreal for several months, and then got a ride as far as Delhi with a cousin from Detroit. I worked in the tobacco fields for a season, just to get the hang of the English language, and then got into sharecropping and really learned the business, he related. When he left home, de Shepper told his father and mother they'd never see him again if he didn't make a go of it. But if he did succeed, he would be back. He has been back. The soil up here is the same as in Oxford County, only newer, explained Curly. We are growing flue-cured types and getting fine results. I have been trying to do all the advertising I can to get other tobacco men in here, but it's hard to convince them that it can be done in this part of the country. Incidentally, part of the $29 million in tobacco grown in Canada, as reported in the 1944 Statistics Ontario, produced over Ontario produced over $26 million worth. In the new tobacco belt this year, a rough estimate is that 1,000 acres of the weed will be added to the province's total. Besides the new Lowell section farms, several growers have begun operating in the Alliston district, south of Camp Borden. Proof that the area has what it takes to grow prime plants is that contracts for the 1946 crop were made by manufacturers last spring. The Shepherd's land will produce the first cigar tobacco ever grown in Simcoe County this year. Not only the Belgians are mining the new discovery. Reeves Snow, youngish native of North Carolina with a tobacco grower father, came to Canada in 27, the same year as the Shepherd, and grew tobacco in the Delhi and Langton district until last year. Reeves is building new curing kilns while he watches the progress of number 401, a new type of flue-cured tobacco originated in Florida. I bought the seed from the Quebec experimental farm, he explained. It is 10 to 15 days earlier than the ordinary varieties and has a larger leaf. Original Norfolk County growers, the Lewis brothers, moved to New Lowell last spring, and this will be their first crop. Bill thinks it is the best land in Ontario for tobacco, and we have to thank the Belgians for finding it. The Lewis boys, along with Curly DeShepherd, are equipping their new kilns with oil heat. As they put it, with coal or wood furnaces to do the heating, you're on the job all the time. With oil, it's just a matter of getting up to the right temperature, and then you can go to bed. There's lots of room for the six oil stoves and the big curing houses, since they don't take up as much room as the long strings of pipe used to with wood or coal heating. Filled, the kilns hold about 1 1/4 acres of picked tobacco leaves.